But at any rate, what I would urge us all to do is to keep looking at the way we have metamorphosed this less than human event called music making into something that's more than human. Without, now this is the paradox, without demeaning the power that music has, because it does have power. That's the clincher. Music has enormous power, and rightly so. The question is, where does it stand in the hierarchy of power? To what extent are people capable of understanding the power of God when the fuses blow and the amps go down, let's say? I'm not being sarcastic. What is worship? You know, Weber and I have talked this over again. And what is this thing called worship? Are we worshiping worship? Are we guilty of that? Or in the academic sense, do we worship about worship? To me, the running sins of higher education, of liberal arts education, is that you're taught to think about things. I think the real goal of education is to learn to think in things. The difference between thinking about music and thinking in music. The difference about thinking about theology and thinking in theology. The difference between thinking about the scriptures, knowing them by heart, and thinking in the scriptures, thinking scripture. There's a little thing in Unceasing Worship on the preposition in, the importance of that in, and how we need a year's, 2 year series of sermons on that preposition. What does in-ness mean? Yes, sir. And then you you had it. I'm sorry. Let me get to you. Do I know, have we met before?
No, sir.
Face is familiar. Go ahead. Not your cast, but your face.
You ruined my whole philosophy of worship after I read Music Through the Eyes of Faith, talking about the relationship of what is created versus the creator. And when we've made art the elevated thing. Mm-hmm. And I guess where I am now is how do, and you'll make it to this, how do you answer your senior minister, your elders, your congregation, when they don't understand? How can I explain that?
I cannot. Your question is, to me, the question of not the hour, but of the age. And I want to say, I'm a preacher's kid, so I grew up in the manse, so to speak. I grew up with guys who said, Harold, for me, the only purpose of the offering is to offertory is to cover up the sound of the money going into the plates. When that sound is over, you're over. I was told that by the president of the Christian Missionary Alliance. The thing that has to be fixed is that lead pastors, well, certainly the seminaries, just stink at developing a theology of worship among its student body. That should be so basic. A theology of human creativity, a theology of the arts, those have to be basic parts of the curriculum. Why? Because the arts are in worship and they can't be avoided because they're commanded. So the lead people should have a theology of them. They should have a love for them, so on and so forth. So let's leave the seminaries go for a minute. Because they stink the most at this. Okay, that's why we have the Bob Webbers trying to develop institutes for worship studies. But the next thing is that preachers, especially in this culture, this worship culture, have relegated the subject of worship to the worship leaders. In other words, it's become a specialty cult. And without knowing any of you, most of the worship leaders don't have a Christian worldview. They do not have a biblically grounded worldview that is not music-based. They have a worldview that can only be articulated if they're talking about the music and its role in worship. So talking to a lead pastor, to me, the only way, at risk perhaps of a job, and I don't mean that carelessly, is to go at him or her theologically, not aesthetically. Because if we go aesthetically, then what we've done, first of all, is to talk in a language that they might not be penalized for not understanding. Second thing is to make aesthetics the driving force, which is what I used to do in my doctoral work, and I had to be born again out of. It's now a force, but it's driven by theology. See, that's the thing. Aesthetics is now more important to me than ever. Why? Because it's subject to a worldview. When it's a worldview, you can shoot it so it's fanny over tin cups. Just make it, and there it rolls. You can really make. But boy, when aesthetics become subject to a biblical worldview, there's no way out. So it's the biblical worldview that pastors so sorely lack. They're the ones. If they were all here, I'd say it. You guys do not think theologically. But you know theology. My question is, you know Scripture, but do you think biblically about other things than what the subject of your sermon is or what the series? I say this with due respect, because these guys are under enormous pressure, not only of wanting to see their congregation stay the same size, to grow, but they're most of them are fighting narcissism all the time. Most of us are, because we're in the public view. We're fighting narcissism all the time. I'm fighting it right now. And when I go home tonight, listen, I will be confessing, and the Lord can take this as a prepayment right now, on the fact that I was up here all by myself, and I'm pretty smart. It's got to be a theological debate. It cannot be aesthetics. It cannot be style. Those are secondary and tertiary issues. Style is secondary to aesthetics. Aesthetics is secondary to a biblical worldview. The language of music, and there is no, it's wrong to say music is a universal language, because it's not. Music is universal, but it's not a universal language. You know the difference? Music is universal with countless dialects, which made the Wesleys very bad mathematicians when they said over 1,000 tongues. And they were only talking about New Guinea. New Guinea, there are 700 unrelated spoken languages just in New Guinea. And the number of musical systems in New Guinea is countless. Let's break. We're past break time. And I don't know where I'm going to start when we get back here.